From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, two developments could delay the start of hydrofracking in New York. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts about that news, and Senator Schumer warns that milk prices could double if the farm bill isn't renewed. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The Cuomo administration announced two developments this week that could delay the start of hydrofracking in New York and is leaving supporters and opponents with many unanswered questions. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
In the past 10 days, Cuomo's Department of Environmental Conservation has taken two significant steps. They're likely to push off any permits for natural gas drilling into at least the new year. First, after months of resisting the idea, DEC Commissioner Joe Martens announced that Cuomo's health department would undertake a health impact review. It would be based on data collected by his agency and needed to be completed before a much-anticipated environmental impact assessment would be finished. And now, late on a Friday, the time when politicians are most likely to release news they'd like to bury, the Department of Environmental Conservation admits it's given up on meeting a November 29th deadline to have rules in place to regulate fracking if the environmental assessment were to give the green light. Jim Smith is with the Independent Oil and Gas Association, the lobby group that represents the gas drilling companies. He says there's a rising level of frustration.
The key concern is how long those delays will be. I mean, certainly anything prolonged at this point would be very disturbing.
A spokeswoman for the DEC says since the environmental assessment is now delayed because of the new health review, the rulemaking process has also fallen behind. The department late last month reversed a position that the two bureaucratic processes were separate. It has now linked them. Spokeswoman Emily DeSantis, in a brief written response, says the restart of the rulemaking will include another round of public hearings and public comments. Smith, with the gas industry lobby, says he hopes that doesn't mean going back to square one in a fracking approval process that began back in 2008.
We would not support a back to the drawing board approach to this whole process. It's already been 4.5 years. I mean, that should be enough time.
Environmentalists are encouraged by the newest delay, but they also have a number of questions. Catherine Natta, with Environmental Advocates, says it's good news that there will be another public hearing and comment process. She thinks the tens of thousands of comments from public hearings late last year led to the decision to go ahead with a health impact review. But she says the somewhat cryptic statements from the Cuomo administration need clarification.
This is an example of public policy by press release, where Governor Cuomo, either through his administration or at the Department of Environmental Conservation, is putting out simple statements, but then not addressing the complex issues that underpin them, not answering the questions.
The environmental group is calling on the governor to commit to holding off on any fracking permits until all of the data is in. Governor Cuomo has continuously said that his environmental agency is gathering all the science and the facts. The administration earlier in the year seemed more in a hurry to complete the environmental assessment and rulemaking, but in recent weeks the governor has said there's no timetable.
It's done when it's done.
In the meantime, Smith, with the gas drilling lobby, says many companies are abandoning plans to drill in New York. He says there's just too much uncertainty here and that other states offer a more stable regulatory climate that he says helps the companies to make business decisions.
These are, in some cases, very large investments these companies are making. Without the regulatory certainty, they can't guarantee success.
A leaseholders group that is eager for drilling to begin calls the two recent developments serial delay tactics. They accuse the governor of turning his back on struggling landowners. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, we have come to the culmination in many ways in the debate over hydrofracking in New York as two new developments this week came about that could delay the start of it. And many of the supporters and the people against are left with more unanswered questions. What are you thinking in this current week about what's happening?
Well, first of all, David, I think democracy has really won on this one. Clearly, from the very beginning, I thought the fix was in. They were going to have for hydrofracking in New York. Cuomo wanted it. His handpicked environmental conservation commissioner was going to back it up. All of the preliminary talk was there. And then they did something very interesting happen. They got 80,000 comments. 80,000 comments. Think about that. A politician gets five comments and they run for the hills. 80,000 comments. And all of them, or virtually all of them, but not absolutely all of them, were negative. And so people thought, you know, if you're going to pollute our water, we want to say in this, and potentially pollute our water, we want to say in this. So I think Andrew Cuomo, who is incredibly bright when it comes to political survival, took a look at this situation and said, you know what? The polls are showing a few more people are ahead, want this than don't want it, especially those who live in New York City whose water supply is protected. But these people who are angry about it are really angry. And this is what we political scientists call political saliency. It means that what is the one issue that you would really vote a politician out of office for? Is it a question of women's rights? Well, with these folks, many of these folks, it is the concept of fracking. Natalie Merchant is doing a wonderful film now, the great singer, and it's the name of it escapes me, but it's something like Listen, Governor Cuomo, or Dear Governor Cuomo. He knew this was coming. And so what they did before the election is they announced basically they were going to start the comment period all over again, and they were going to start getting more health things up. You know, David Paterson, before these very microphones, came in here one day and he said, I would never do that. And basically, he came out against fracking on this show, on our show, when he was governor. Cuomo came in with quite a different attitude. But you'd have to have a brain scan to know because he has the right to deny anything that he wants. But it was clear from the obit dicta and the rest of the remarks from being governor that's where he was going pro. And now they're starting all over again. Now, there are those people who think, well, you know, if he's doing this, it's all a trick. He's going to wait till after the elections and then he's going to do it. And so these people by that time will have forgotten by the time the next election rolls around. But remember, he's got to get reelected also. Pete Seeger, the great folk singer and the father of modern folk music, said, you know, listen, Governor, your father was the great on film. Your father was may have been the greatest governor in history of New York. But you, if you take their money for this, you will go down as the worst. I think that must have stung. And I do think that he's a smart enough man, and he is smart, to get out of the way. And that's what he did. And so, as the old saying goes, he blinked.
One of the things that the state legislature and the governor may not be able to move out of the way of, Alan, is the tight budget that's coming. We even saw State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli vie for an early warning system because so many local communities are hurting. Could this come back to bite
well,
the governor?
Bite the governor. And I'll tell you why. Because it was the governor who came up with this tax cap. And the tax cap is what is hurting these local communities. At least that's the allegation. Remember, there's always a background here. Remember that you have a controller who does not get along with the governor very well. I'm a huge fan of this controller, I'll be honest with you. And I think Governor Cuomo has been almost gratuitous in the way in which he's treated Tom DiNapoli. Didn't endorse some fellow Democrat, all the rest of it. So if I was the controller, I would get out front and I would say, look, tough times are coming, everybody. And really, when you start talking about these local governments not being able to make it, who are suffering under the constraints of not being able to raise enough tax revenue because because of the governor who went out there to do it and made him popular. I'll tell you right now, I suspect the controller knew very well that this is not going to reflect well on a governor. Now, from his point of view, the governor, as you know, has been investigating Assemblyman Vito Lopez and saying to the controller who signed the check, basically the hush money check from the government, along with a legal opinion by the attorney general, who the governor also seems to be competing with because he was attorney general after Cuomo, that one good turn deserves another. And I suspect, when Tom DiNapoli does this, it is going to cause some embarrassment to the governor. And I think it's a gutsy move on his part.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Senator Charles Schumer warns that milk prices in stores could double if the Farm Bill isn't renewed by the end of the year. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Farm Bill, the framework for food and farm policy, is enacted every 5 years. The 2012 bill is stalled in the U.S. House, where leadership will not hold a vote on the measure until after Election Day. But the 2008 Farm Bill expired on September 30th. Over the weekend, Senator Charles Schumer raised concerns that if the Farm Bill does not pass during the lame duck session, the Agriculture Act of 1949 will go into effect on January 1st. Schumer says that means consumers could see milk prices rise to $6 or more per gallon. Northeast Dairy Foods Association Executive Vice President Bruce Krupke says New York's senior senator is making irresponsible claims.
Senator Schumer is simply playing politics. He's trying to force a vote for the 2012 Farm Bill in the House of Representatives. If you're a consumer, don't worry. The Farm Bill will be passed or will be extended, and you won't see $6 a gallon for milk. That will not happen. Senator Schumer is simply playing politics. Why doesn't he call for an extension of the current Farm Bill? There's no reason why the Senate can't call for an extension.
The National Milk Producers Federation says it is a real possibility that milk prices will double. Senior Vice President of Communications Chris Galen calls it an unintended consequence of the failure to pass the Farm Bill.
What could happen come January is that in the case of the dairy industry, we could revert back to a 60-year-old law that could result in much, much higher prices for dairy farmers and ultimately for consumers as well. So this is one of those little things that people haven't really thought much about because it's never happened before where we've come to this threshold.
Why would a 1949 law affect the 2012 Farm Bill? Chris Galen explains.
There is a program that's designed to help farmers in current farm policy called the Dairy Price Support Program. Under that, the U.S. Department of Agriculture will serve as a buyer of last resort for dairy commodities to prevent prices from collapsing. If that program sunsets at the end of this year, along with other farm programs, in the absence of a new farm bill, the price support program doesn't go away. It reverts back to a 1949 law, and that 1949 law sets the price support purchase levels at much, much higher thresholds, 3 or even 4 times higher than the current price support level.
Cornell University Professor of Agricultural Economics Andrew Novakovich says Senator Schumer is not necessarily predicting prices will rise, but illustrating the severe consequences of failing to pass the new farm bill or to extend the current legislation.
It wouldn't just be gallons of milk. It would be pounds of cheese, containers of yogurt, cartons of butter, every dairy product. This is not at all unlike the much larger conversation we're having about the so-called fiscal cliff. The farm bill is by nowhere near as dramatic as the fiscal cliff, but it has the same set of difficult politics and also has some pretty ugly consequences if we fail to get past those politics. And I think that's what Senator Schumer is reminding us of, that this seemingly obscure bit of legislation actually could have some pretty significant importance for all of us.
The farm bill passed in the Senate in June by a 2-to-1 margin.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Governor Andrew Cuomo's Cleaner, Greener Communities program has taken off. Its mission is to create green jobs, improve energy efficiency, and reduce pollution. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now the panel is making a mark in New York's Capital Region.
Announced by Governor Cuomo in his 2011 State of the State Address, the Cleaner, Greener Communities program is administered by the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. A coalition of Capital Region municipalities and organizations has received NYSERDA funding to create a regional sustainability plan for 8 counties: Albany, Columbia, Greene, Rensselaer, Saratoga, Schenectady, Warren, and Washington. Doug Melnick is director of planning for the City of Albany, the lead municipality for the project.
So it's really a comprehensive approach to looking at the 8-county region and also looking at how all those different aspects interconnect. I think the City of Albany's interest in this is it really furthers our goals. We just recently adopted our Albany 2030 comprehensive plan this past April that has a very strong focus on sustainability.
Mike Tucker is president and CEO of the Center for Economic Growth.
Well, certainly there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in the region that both businesses and individuals can implement to use less resources and to begin the education and evolution that will result in the more broader concepts of smart growth and other types of regional sustainability development plans that we want to put in place as guides and to live by as we move forward.
Tucker defines sustainability as simply, quote, good common sense practices that both businesses and individuals can implement on the short term, leading to, in the long term, developing a strategy and a roadmap
that people, both in business and in their personal lives, can use as best practices and as a checklist to be sure that that process continues to ensure that we have the resources and the sustainable environment that we will need for our children and our grandchildren.
The Greener Communities panel will participate in 3 public workshops, Monday, October 1st at Union College in Schenectady, Tuesday the 2nd at the Fort Ann School District in Fort Ann, and Wednesday the 3rd at Columbia Green Community College in Hudson. The meetings run from 7 to 9 p.m., focusing on topics including but not limited to land use and livable communities, water, transportation, energy, and climate adaptation. Doug Melnick says he is impressed by the level of public participation to date.
One of the best times to plan is during an economic downturn and really being prepared for when things pick up. And so I think this plan will really provide that framework to really benefit the region.
Mike Tucker points out that a more sustainable region is more livable and efficient.
And I think as people understand and implement the ideas and concepts that will come out of this study, that they will see the benefit that these programs provide in terms of creating jobs, economic development, and a better place to live.
There's more information on our website, wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. A recent study by the consulting firm McKinsey & Company concluded that the U.S. could, by the end of this decade, eliminate about $1.2 trillion in wasted energy every year. But as the Innovation Trail's Matt Richman reports, New York's attempts to get started on that goal have shown that it won't be easy.
Back in 2009, New York State started its Green Jobs, Green New York program. Eventually, $112 million was pledged to help building owners improve their energy efficiency. The next year, the government added the option of on-bill financing. That gives owners the option of paying off the upgrades at low interest on their monthly utility bill. But to get approval for on-bill financing, an installer has to show that the work will pay for itself in the form of future energy savings over a 10-year period. Calculating those savings before any work gets done is tricky, says Binghamton area installer Pat Dundon.
But the program itself is a great idea. Like any other learning curve, once we figure it out, it'll get a lot better.
The first step for a customer is to call an installer, like Dundon, to come and do an energy audit. He'll check where cold air is getting in and tell you where you're wasting power. A full upgrade for a standard two-story family home in the Binghamton area is about $12,000 or $14,000, says Dundon.
We would probably add insulation in the basement, and we would probably be changing out the furnace and water heater. And we'd probably use some foam in the attic and maybe the basement too.
During the audit, he collects all the data he can about the client's house and energy usage. That gets entered into a software program called the Targeted Retrofit Analysis Tool, or TREAT.
There's a place in here to enter the utility bills. We show natural gas in a monthly billing for a couple of years, and then electricity in a couple of years of billing.
This is done so the software can make a model of the house. It uses that model to calculate how much energy the house actually uses. Then the customer's energy savings are calculated.
It's really, really weird. It's all designed to be better for the consumer, so they don't get told they're going to save $900 and only save $5. But it really hurts us in terms of getting more jobs through. Right.
Then it moves along to the next step, bank approval for the loan. Or it gets sent back to the drawing board. Dundon says out of every six calls, only one eventually turns into a job.
Okay, and then how long does it take to do the actual work?
2 days. Usually, at the most, three, and we're done.
The program is run by New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, or NYSERDA. As the loans get paid back, the money goes into the loan fund, so there's no expiration date and no rush to spend the money. Spokeswoman Dale Zatlin says NYSERDA is working to streamline the process, but that's not their first priority.
We're a public benefit corporation, so our job is to do work that is for the public good. And so we obviously have to keep consumers in mind and make sure that they are protected with any program that we offer.
Zatlin says they've eliminated some of the spreadsheets that installers have to fill out and made it easier for customers to apply for credit. With colder weather on the way, Dundon says if people want an upgrade finished by the middle of winter, they're running out of time to get started. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richman for InnovationTrail.org.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1240. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.